And welcome back. I don't know how to start these episodes. This is weird because it's not a normal episode. I mean, this whole season's been kind of a unique experiment, I guess. But anywho, welcome back to Too Young for This Trek. I'm Eric Slater, joined once again by Locathor.
Hello.
And MC is back once again.
Hello.
And today we're talking about Strange New Worlds Season 2, Episode 8. What's it called again?
Under the Cloak of War.
That's right.
It's written by Davey Perez and directed by Jeff W. Byrd, B-Y-R-D.
Nice. MC, do you got a summary? Any thoughts there?
I do kind of have a summary.
Okay.
Former Klingon general comes to be an ambassador of peace aboard the Enterprise, and former enemies confess their sins to him and kill him, essentially. There we go. Quick, to the point.
Yeah, basically. Spoilers, I guess.
It's an interesting episode because we get this Klingon who comes on board. It's very shortly after the Klingon War.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be an ambassador of peace and has created peace in different situations. But the way that the Enterprise crew, well, some people on the Enterprise see him and treat this Klingon, you're like, something's going on. It's not just this guy's reputation. Because the things that they say he did in the past and how he's acting now, it doesn't, like, gel.
They're very suspicious that someone could make such a radical turn.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to think at first, because it seems kind of like, I don't know, like an interesting... this episode is very interesting, but, like, the way it starts out, you're kind of made to think that maybe the Starfleet crew that served in the Klingon War kind of have sort of this bias against him. And they kind of do.
They definitely absolutely,
they
do.
Absolutely do. Yeah. And part of that's understandable because the
for
trauma
good
they
reason.
Went through, but like it's different from like when Kirk and his crew encountered the Klingons and they had their, you know, prejudices against them. Cause they didn't actually, I don't think most of them fought in the war. So there's kind of a different perspective here that we haven't seen play
and,
out before.
Yeah, 10 years later, the staff is going to cycle around. A lot of the people that might have been in Starfleet at the time wouldn't even be on the ship anymore. Ortegas is one of the detractors, and she, you know, isn't around anymore. I think I like this episode because we regularly see that as much as the Federation tries to put on a good face, and as much as Starfleet tries to put on a good face, that when you stress them out, humans are actually still exactly as prone to faults as a modern human, even in the future.
I mean, yeah.
That's a great point.
Essentially, we were monkeys with sticks and rocks, and now we have guns, and in the future, we're going to have phaser. Like, we still react very much the same way as we did when we were primitive. It's just we have better understanding and control over how we act and react nowadays, and hopefully in the future we'll react and act even better, which is the whole, like, the put on the Federation face statement is very much like, yeah, let's try and be the best versions of ourselves. We don't have to go in there and be the best right now, but we have to try and be the best of ourselves.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there, though, that, you know, yes, we've come a long way in our current timeline, and hopefully we continue to progress socially and scientifically and all that, but we are the same species that we were 40,000 years ago. Like, we haven't technically evolved, even if we've evolved somewhat socially. And I, you know, even if that continues, we'll still have, you know, we're not going to be perfect, you know, especially in a couple hundred years.
Well,
I think that was kind of, sorry.
it's, I think it's just a little more subtle than that. Like in the original series and in TNG, as led by Roddenberry or people that had been, you know, close enough with Roddenberry, even after Roddenberry wasn't on TNG anymore. The idea was always that in the future, humanity has moved past all these foibles that they have.
Actually, the issue at stake is patriotism. You must return to your world and put an end to the commies. All it takes are a few good men.
What? That nonsense is centuries behind us.
But you can't deny that you're still a dangerous, savage child race.
Most certainly I deny it. I agree we still were when humans wore costumes like that 400 years ago.
And DS9, particularly Quark and Sisko, countered by saying that, oh my gosh, Zach is messaging the Strange New Worlds thing, which is causing me to have Discord notifications.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Oh. It's fine. I just had to turn my phone off. So,
okay. He just said, you kids have fun.
Quark's rebuttal to Sisko when Sisko says, hey, we've done all these great things, is that if you take away a human's niceties, they're exactly the horrible, brutal, violent creature that they say that they've moved past. Sisko made the point to, like, the Federation people back, you know, back on Earth, that
just because a group of people belong to the Federation, it does not mean that they are saints.
Excuse me.
Do you know what the trouble is?
No.
The trouble is Earth.
Really?
On Earth, there is no poverty, no crime, no war. You look out the window of Starfleet headquarters and you see paradise. Well, it's easy to be a saint in paradise, but the Maquis do not live in paradise. Out there, in the demilitarized zone, all the problems haven't been solved yet. Out there, there are no saints, just people. Angry, scared, determined people who are going to do whatever it takes to survive, whether it meets with the Federation approval or not.
Makes sense to me.
We're not really better people.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that is such a good call out. I love that reference.
And so putting that back into Strange New Worlds, there was a Klingon war and presumably things went very badly. And so it's sort of showing that, like, it's not just some goofy DS9 idea. We want to have this idea in all of Star Trek that humans can say they're better, but they're not necessarily. If you stress them out, they will do bad things.
Right. And like it's like that, the ideal versus the reality, which I think is really interesting. And it isn't something Star Trek plays with a lot, but when it does, I think it does a great job at it. Like DS9, not all of DS9, but most of DS9 gets into that territory and does a really good job with it. And I think Discovery, you know, for its faults, I think it did try to play with some of those more nuanced elements, like the darker side of, you know, the future and all that. And I think it makes sense, particularly in this. Yeah. Well, in this episode is really interesting because it builds off of what we saw in season one of Discovery, but they didn't really get a chance to focus on it as much as, you know, we would have liked, I guess. So it was cool to see more of that developed. But I think it makes a lot of sense if you're looking at the timeline of things, because in Kirk's era, it was, okay, when you get to Picard and TNG, you know, it does seem like humanity and the Federation have come a long way, right? Back in Kirk's time, it wasn't quite so perfect. You know what I mean? Like, there was a lot more gray area, I guess. So I feel like some of these storylines kind of make a little bit more sense during this time, especially with the conflict with the Klingons.
We want to talk about gray area in like the TNG. We should talk about Voyager because there's lots of gray in that show.
Yeah. I mean, they tried.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, Janeway is another example of like when you push her too far, she will start doing anything to protect the ship and it doesn't matter. Federation principles can kind of go out the window, except when they can't go out the window because the writers want them that time, you know.
Right. I feel like Voyager could have gone a lot farther.
By Picard's era, the recent major conflict had been the Cardassian Wars,
right?
And O'Brien, there's the episode where they have to like bring in the captain that's gone crazy. He's convinced the Cardassians are planning something, and O'Brien gets his scene.
I was on Setlik 3 with Captain Maxwell the morning after the massacre. We were too late, of course. Almost everyone was dead.
It was a terrible mistake. We were told the outpost was a launching place for a massive attack against us.
The only people left alive were in an outlying district of the settlement. I was sent there with a squad to reinforce them. Cardassians were advancing on us, moving through the streets, destroying, killing. I was with a group of women and children when two Cardassian soldiers burst in. I stunned one of them. The other one jumped me. We struggled. One of the women threw me a phaser, and I fired. The phaser was set at maximum. The man just incinerated there before my eyes. I'd never killed anything before. When I was a kid, I'd worry about swatting a mosquito. It's not you I hate, Cardassian. I hate what I became. Because of you.
Yeah. Man, DS9 was so good.
Well, no, but that was in TNG.
Oh, it was. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was right. That was a TNG episode. He gives that little monologue about, I don't hate you, I hate what your people turned me into. Yeah. And he does that when he's on the Enterprise D talking to a Cardassian.
That must have been the beginning of like the writers like putting O'Brien through hell from then on, you know.
Oh yeah,
no.
like that was like the first instance.
He has the worst luck. He yeah. has like Irish luck all the way through it. Like, oh,
relatable.
So bad.
But yeah, okay. So when this episode started, I can't remember the exact first scene, but I know we're introduced to the Klingon ambassador. Is he? No, he's not. He's a Klingon. And he's an ambassador, I believe,
he's not a Klingon ambassador.
No, he doesn't. He's not actually part of the Klingon Empire. He's a defector. Now. That's what it was.
He is a Federation ambassador, and his race is Klingon. Yes.
That's right. I thought that was extremely interesting. And we always kind of assume that Worf was the first Klingon in the Federation, but he was actually just the first Starfleet officer that happened to be Klingon. He wasn't the first Klingon in the Federation altogether. So I thought that was really interesting.
I think a lot of like Klingons come into the Federation as like orphans and stuff, and they get raised in the Federation. But I think I have a feeling that a lot of them feel like they need to go back home at some point. But Worf was just like, well, Worf's different. He's just like,
yeah. But even he was like obsessed with this culture and eventually did go back, you know.
Yeah.
He was, and importantly, he was obsessed with a vision of his culture that was completely idealized. Inaccurate. He was always imagining that everyone was going to be better than they actually were every time he met a real Klingon. Real Klingons are nothing like he imagines them to. They shout, they're boisterous, they're so full of joy in a way that Worf basically is not.
Yeah, he was not expecting that. It was kind of a culture shock, oddly enough.
I think Worf sees Klingons as like old knights, sort of honorable, like going up against
chivalry.
Yeah, yeah. And instead of that, he gets drunken, boisterous frat boys, essentially.
I like that you brought up knights, because in real history, like the Templar knights, like a lot of there's this whole myth about how they're so chivalrous, but most of them were just mercenaries, and a lot of them did horrible things, you know. So,
oh yeah,
just like, you know, another one of those instances of art imitating life and et cetera.
Right.
But okay, so where are we going with that? I had a point. let's see.
So Rock comes on board.
Yes. And at some point they refer to him as the butcher of Jigal?
Yeah.
Jigal.
Jigal.
The butcher of Jigal.
Jigal, yeah.
Jigal.
J apostrophe G A L.
Yeah, that's a Klingon word there. And I mean, there's a pretty interesting reveal later on in the episode, but I don't know if we should hold off on that.
No, we should hold off on that.
Okay.
But we get the backstory from Ortega and Uhura talking when the captain and everyone else arrives on the bridge of him murdering his three subordinates so he could get away, essentially.
Yeah.
This part didn't make sense.
Yeah.
If the story goes that he had to kill his own lieutenants or generals or whatever to defect to the Federation, why would Ortegas be so upset by this? He killed a bunch of Klingon generals. She would have done the same if she were in the room. Why does Ortegas care?
I think it's more to do with like the perception of he's going to do that to his own people. What would he do to us? Like,
that's a good point.
The order to kill any non-Klingon soldier.
That part made sense.
Yeah.
Like he gave all these bad orders and stuff. And I understand where she is on that. But then when he kills like all the top Klingons, congratulate him at that point. We've been trying to get rid of them for years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also like you find out like a dictator in another country just killed off a whole bunch of his top brass and then went and got himself arrested for it. It was like, yeah, but he still did all that evil shit.
Yeah.
Before he got there. It's weird.
Again,
to
a lot of real world parallels like, with stuff like that. Yeah. So it's like,
don't.
It seems a little.
Don't
too
look into
perfect.
How the NASA program got started. Just don't right. check in on how any of that.
Oh yeah,
paperclip.
Yeah. Operation
no, it's
paperclip.
It's a lot like that. It really is.
Don't
that
look
is
into
such a good...
how the Russians got rockets, or you know how Russia got a whole bunch of other stuff.
I mean, we could sit here with examples all day. There, you know, there's a lot of parallels here with other. You know, real world events and stuff, and I thought that was interesting.
And
but
let's not talk about, you know, Argentina and small German towns in Argentina and why they popped up.
Yeah,
like, let's not talk about that.
No, because that's a whole nother podcast. We can maybe talk about that on my history podcast at some point. So I thought it was really interesting because right away, as the audience, we're like not sure what to think because normally with these type of stories. The person they're, how would you put it? Like being,
duplicitous.
Yeah. Well, the crew members, we assume that they're not quite in the right on this, that like he has redeemed himself is kind of, at least that's the way I felt that the episode was kind of pitching it towards us at first, but by the end you realize there's a little bit more to it and Mabanga, like that whole, I mean, we'll get into it. But.
If this was a TNG episode, that's absolutely what would have happened. There's one crew person, they don't trust the new guy, and then it turns out that actually, like, they do something in the dramatic final act, and then they were good all along, and we should just trust everyone all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad,
Garrick.
You made a much better, you made my point a lot better than I did. That is kind of like what you expect. Them to do with a Star Trek episode, but it takes a very different turn by the end, and I thought that was brilliant. But
I think they do that a lot in DS9 with Garrick.
Doctor, you're not intimating that I'm some sort of spy, are you?
Mm-hmm. Like, they make him out to be this very shady character, and then he just keeps coming through for everyone. Like,
he's an assassin.
And no one trusts him.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Another interesting thing is as the episode goes on, I, at least this was my reaction. I was like, is he even Klingon? Like, because the way he's acting and like, it's like he's overcorrecting, you know, he's acting so human that I almost was like, is this like Harry Mudd in a mask or something? Is this like a ruse? Like, what is going on?
I mean,
on
it
here?
Was a ruse.
It was a ruse, but for a totally different reason.
Yeah.
I don't know that it is a ruse. Because, okay. I mean, we'll get to it, but I there's the most minimal amount of ruse going on here. He sure. genuinely believes all these things mm-hmm. that he's advocating, that, you know, there should be peace between worlds and stuff.
Yeah, which is admirable, for sure. But yeah, so what else happens?
We get, like, their interactions on the bridge, and the captain just like giving or taking a side eye, and then I think there's a scene in a bar with Spock.
Yeah, they're mm-hmm. they're on a tour around the ship. We go to the bridge, and then we go to the bar, and Spock is trying to make Ractigino in their replicator, based That's off right. that time earlier in the season.
Perhaps we can conclude this discussion over a barrel of blood wine.
You drink blood wine.
I have been known to.
When he However, got drunk with a bunch of Klingons.
He got drunk with a bunch of Klingons. However, his Ractigino replicator recipe is not quite right. And even the mug itself comes out burning hot. And yeah. the ambassador goes to pick it up and burns his hand. So they're like, oh, let's just go to sickbay, get that fixed up, you know, 10, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's how it leads around to Mbenga seeing Ra.
Yeah.
Now,
and Nurse Chapel.
That scene, though, was so powerful because who's the actor that plays Mbenga? He does an amazing job in this show.
I do not.
But you could just see it. You could just see it in his face. Like, it was like, it just brought up everything for him, you know?
All this. And then you see, like, his PTSD reaction. And you're like, what's going on? And then it cuts
yeah,
to the bloody
like hyperventilating.
Intro to the show. It's...
Mm-hmm.
Space. The final frontier.
And you're like, oh, great. Now I've got to wait 2 minutes for this bloody opening
I mean, you
sequence.
Could skip it. Yeah, but it is a good intro. I don't usually skip it, honestly.
Joseph Mbenga is played by Babs, and I hope I say this right, Olu uh-huh. Sanmokun. It's got a lot of letters, but I'm pretty sure it's
yeah.
Olu Sanmokun.
Nice.
He's yeah, such
he's,
a good
He's fantastic. And he, like, I can believe this is the same Mbenga that we saw briefly in TOS, too. But, like, they've added so much to his character, you know? Especially in season one with the whole storyline with his daughter and everything. And now this, you know, his PTSD from the Klingon War and everything. It's a lot. Really interesting
yep.
stuff. And okay, so let's talk about the flashbacks, because those happen pretty quickly. In
yeah.
episode, right?
So as soon as
they're interspersed everywhere. But
yeah, but as soon as the intro is done, it shows Nurse Chapel getting dropped off on the moon of Jigal.
And this. Okay, the effects here were pretty amazing, but it's not really the point. It kind of like sets the scene a little bit, but you see like there's like battles going on. Like it's intense. It's constant fighting. They really set the mood very well with this. It feels like a World War I trench warfare movie, you know, like it's not fun. Yeah, like
I
the last
like,
place in the universe you would want to be.
I like how she's like, oh, so where are we landing? And they're like, no, you're getting drive-by dropped off. Like,
mm-hmm.
we're going to keep flying and drop you off, and then we're going to leave, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck. So, yeah, then, Nurse Chapel and Mbenga were both here, stationed here, right?
Yeah.
And we also find out in the episode that Ortegas was in the war, but I don't think she was there at De Gaulle.
No.
Jigal.
She was Jigal. Yeah, she mentions a bunch of places, but I don't think she was at Jigal.
Yeah.
But this first flashback is about Nurse Chapel's arrival, and essentially she meets with the head medic And he's like, you haven't heard? You're the head nurse. And then keeps just going on about his business. And he's like, hey, if you need anything, ask me. We're probably not going to get it. If you can't find me, ask Joseph. And then they continue on to their tour. And he's like, here's Tent City and your Echo 25 or something. Yeah. And she points at like a leg out of a tub, like one of those aluminium tubs that you see in hardware stores. And she's like, who's that? And it's like, oh, that's Joseph. And then Mabanga stands up out of the tub, like, and just goes to work immediately. And they're both at like the transporter hub, just like scanning people and being like, go that way, go that way.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
This whole part gets pretty intense. There's, I guess, a few things to talk about during these sequences. I figure we'll just talk about them all in this segment, if that's okay.
Sure.
But
hit me with the thing.
I'm not quite going in. Yeah, I'm not quite going in order here. But at one point there is, I guess, an officer that's injured, right? And it's like real bad. It's gruesome. And they decide to save him by putting him into the transport buffer.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting. And it's also like, I guess, the first instance of that. Because obviously we see that later on in this last season. But
yeah,
Mabanga probably learned that technique here. But given that he's not some sort of transporter tech like wizard or whatever, he probably learned it from yet some other person who like taught him this is what we can do in an emergency.
Yeah, that makes sense. It might not be the first instance ever, I guess. Just the first, or I mean,
probably some teleport engineer took him aside and was like, hey, if you ever need to put someone in stasis, this is a quick, easy way to do that.
Yeah. But there is there's a risk, as we find out later. I mean, I guess we could say it, right? They needed an emergency transport a whole bunch of people, right? And I think they end up having to delete this guy, right?
Wait. No. The transport buffer. Alvarado's in there. If we purge the logs, he'll die.
Pattern deleted. Power restored. Transport initiated.
No. What did you do?
We saved lives.
Well, yeah. The system jams, and to get the jam fixed as fast as possible, they just have to hard reboot everything, which also clears the guy out of the RAM.
Yeah, which,
that's terrifying.
Clears the buffer, which means that guy just died. And
yeah. I mean, it sounds like unfortunate, he would have.
But would have anyway, but the thing is they needed to save a bunch of other lives. It's essentially the tram query.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
trolley problem.
If
no one knows what that is there's five people on one track and one person on another track. Mm-hmm. Tram's headed towards the intersection. You got to choose which way it's going to go. Some parent trying to teach their little kid this, picks up the person from the other track and puts it on to the other track and then drives the tram over all the people.
So it's good. Chapel. Yeah. So Chapel, who is newer to the situation, is really stressed out about this, but Mabanga just reaches over and hits the reset button and just like takes on that burden for her. He is willing to just make these hard calls. He's seen enough. He just needs to get through each day, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that really comes up in like a lot of the next few flashbacks as well. There's one where they're saving a soldier's life and he's literally like, hey, just pump his heart. and Nurse Chapel has to like physically pump this dude's heart as Mbanga fixes him, and then they like send him off to dermal or whatever. And then there's a point where he gets approached by some spy dude to go kill a bunch of Klingons or something. And he's like, I'm here to save people, sort of thing.
Yeah, which is good. I think that was a good moment for his character.
And it's really like, he like approaches the soldier's life who is just saved, and he's like, hey, we can get you on bed rest so you don't have to go on this suicide run, whatever they're planning. Like, he's just there trying to save people's lives, and all this trauma builds up throughout the episode and these flashbacks until the last flashback, which we'll get into near the end of the episode. I'm not bringing it up yet because we got a lot more to talk about of what's happening in before we get to that point.
On a lighter note, we didn't mention it a second ago, but the administrator of this medical base, Buck, is actually played by Clint Howard, who was in original series.
He was in a few episodes.
The little kid in the Corbomite maneuver.
Wasn't he also in? He's had a few cameos
Deep
over
Space
the years.
Nine.
Yeah, yep. He was also in Deep Space Nine, and it says here Enterprise and Discovery.
Enterprise was the other one. Discovery. I remember him from.
I think he played an Orion as like a bit part in a Discovery episode.
Oh yeah, he did, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that guy looks really familiar. I can't remember why. And that's why. he's in a lot of Star Trek now. Very, very cool.
He's been in Star Trek practically since the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so awesome. He's royalty. Let's see. There's a whole subplot about Pike's jambalaya.
We get another dinner scene. We're always going back to Pike's dinner scenes.
Okay, what about that pink parsley?
Yeah, that was a cool touch. What I love about
we get a scene with Pike and Mbanga, and they essentially, we get told that there was like protests on the last ship, so they weren't enough war veterans there to be face to face with him, so to more humanize him or like de-villainize this guy. So
Mike's trying.
And that's part of the reason why he's come down to invite him personally to this dinner that we're about to see. And Mbanga runs into Ortega in the hallway, just wondering if she's going to go in or not, and then it the jambalaya is like the little nudge over.
What I thought was great about this dinner scene was it gave me Star Trek VI vibes a little bit.
In any case, we know where this is leading. The annihilation of our culture.
That's not true.
No.
No. To be or not to be. That is the question which preoccupies our people, Captain Kirk. We need breathing room.
Earth, Hitler, 1938.
I beg your pardon.
Well, I see we have a long way to go.
But again, it's like a very different kind of era. With Star Trek VI, it's like kind of towards the end of the Cold War climate. I mean, the Cold War that they're having with the Klingons. This is right at the beginning of that. You know, this is right after the Klingon War. So things are a little bit more tense, you know? And it was just really cool to see that. Like, if you put these next to each other, it's kind of the like bookends of this entire conflict, really.
And I think Mbanga actually comports himself much better than Kirk does at Kirk's own version of this dinner.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. Whereas Mbanga has more reason to actually be like not okay with it. It's kind of hard to quantify that because Kirk had a personal tragedy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Different situation. Yes.
Nurse Chapel is clearly struggling as well. But Swift's like, hey, let me go talk to him and get him off this subject that's clearly frustrating you. And it shows, like, the him getting in touch with his feelings is helping him understand those emotions in other people and making him better at essentially being more personable on the ship, which is not sort of how we see Spock in later things, but still.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where the show goes with this. Like, I know that eventually it'll add up and eventually we'll get the cold, hard, calculated Spock that we all know and love, but they have to do it in a way where it does, where it feels authentic, you know, like he has to have like a real reason to, you know, be like that, I guess.
He was
at this point,
he was never that cold and hard and calculated. He played it cool, but in the way that Data obviously has emotions and he just doesn't realize that what he has is called emotions.
Yeah,
Spock,
I guess that's
having emotions all the time.
Just hiding it.
He just, yeah, I mean, he's trying to hide it. Usually does, doesn't always.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. There's plenty of examples where, you know, like that scene where he's like, Jim, you know.
Right.
There's a few times where he loses that composure.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. He clearly does care. I mean, look at Wrath of Khan. There's a lot of good examples of Spock getting emotional.
Exactly.
I
think you mentioned earlier, I think, Eric, about how Ra is kind of overcorrecting. We might
it
say
feels
that
inauthentic almost.
Starfleet itself is also overcorrecting by trying to get direct war veterans into the same room with Ra as often as possible. They're doing it too. Everyone is on this, like,
all masks,
you know, really on eggshells type situation.
Yeah, you could say that they're both trying too hard, you know. It's like, it's maybe a little early for this, you know. I don't know, it's complicated. That's what I love about it, because it's not a black and white episode. It like really makes you think, like,
It really comes out with, so the confrontation with Ortega and her just being outraged and standing up and walking out, that and Mbaga's like clenched fist, the whole, and Pike noticing it and him just like sending him out, like it shows that not everyone is okay with this. And while they're trying to put on this very facetious front, like, everything's fine, we're all getting along, it's not really like that, and people are gonna act how, like, they're gonna act out in different ways. Mm-hmm. And we really see a range of human emotion and how we react to a situation in different ways. Like, even though some of us are more subdued, and the anger is still there. Like, and people who know how to tell the signs can tell when people are getting pushed to the edge.
Yeah, I mean, Mbaga was clearly triggered.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see.
I think there's a few flashbacks in this point with the soldier and his doubt.
Yeah.
And then just being I was drugged and tired, and now I'm ready to go back to war, essentially.
Yeah.
Thanks for the patch-up job.
Stay low. Fight hard.
I'm a soldier, Doc. This is what I do.
I know there was a reference at one point. Yeah. There was a reference at one point to, I think, the super soldier stuff that they were using earlier on in the season.
Protocol 12.
Protocol 12, it's called.
Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah, he has a vial of it when we see him near the end of the episode. So, but it's brought up by I'm not sure, the special forces, is that who they are? The I'm Andorian. Guessing.
Yeah.
Is it? I think it was a Section 31, maybe.
I don't know that it was Section 31, but it was some sort of Black Ops organization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think everything has to be Section 31 every time there's any intelligence operation going on.
Well, whenever it's sketchy, I'm sure I tend to think not. Section 31. But,
yeah.
I do think the Super Soldier Serum thing is a little interesting. I don't hate it. It kind of makes sense to me, especially when fighting the Klingons. But it is a little weird, though, because they're against genetic modification. Like, this doesn't count, like, even though it's temporary. Like, I feel like, I don't know.
Oh, super drugs and gene mods are totally different issues.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, where do you draw the line? It sounds very hypocritical to me, but I guess maybe that's the point.
Yep.
The entire
Una's had this her whole life.
The ban against gene therapy is another lie the Federation is telling itself, that like we've propaganda. Solved this one specific thing, therefore we have fixed the problem and we don't need to think about it any harder.
Yeah. I kind of like that these newer shows are kind of pointing out things like that we just kind of like brushed off, didn't think about ever again. But it's like they're really like putting these kind of conflicts front and center. Like, yes, we've solved all of Earth's problems, and we ran into a whole lot of new problems out in space.
And later, on finally reaching deep space, humans, of course, found enemies to fight out there, too. And to broaden those struggles, you again found allies for still more murdering. The same old story all over again.
We still have, like, some very real world issues here at play within their government, you know? I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. They've been handling it pretty well, especially in this show, I think.
The problem is like every government is made up of people.
Yeah.
And the flaws in people as individuals come out in government. And it's
sometimes
annoying,
are amplified does happen. By government. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're definitely amplified by government situation, by institutional pressures that take normal people and like just grind them down until they become just terrible.
I guess that's why the admirals are always the ones that go evil, because they've been dealing with this stuff for so long they finally snap.
Yeah, I mean that's even like they in Lower Decks at the end of season 3, they ask the Badmiral, why did you turn into a Badmiral? And he's like,
Starfleet is so competitive. Once you're an Admiral, you hit a wall. I've been trying for years to make a name for myself. I'm not letting you take it from me.
I got this stats sheet. I need to keep my numbers high. And this was my solution.
Yep. Basically.
And I think I do want to... You said that it's more interesting that newer Trek is sort of poking at some of these things. I know, I guess I don't know how old MC's age is, but Eric, I think you're about the same age as me. So when you were watching Star Trek, you probably were like an 8-year-old or whatever. And you weren't thinking about it too hard because like you couldn't think about it too hard because you're 8.
That's true.
And that's just not what a little child does. They don't know enough about the world to contextualize some of these things.
You're right. I am probably filtering it through my nostalgia. There probably was more nuance with some of that stuff than I'm giving it credit for.
There sometimes was. Honestly, there wasn't always as good writing in the past. It takes everything improves, not just cameras, when you go to newer shows. So
that's true.
There was a lot of
and just for the record, I'm
like,
old.
Yeah. What?
And for the record, I'm old. I'm 36.
Oh, that's
yeah, I think,
only a year
I think
older
MC's
than me.
Got
me.
Yeah, you beat us by 1 year.
Yep. I'm the oldest on all the podcasts at the moment. I feel it.
Yeah.
I know one podcaster who's 40. Not person, but I know of a podcaster that's 40. So I think you're safe.
Yeah. So let's see. I'm trying. Sorry, my brain.
We've kind of chopped the scenes a little out of order at this point.
Yeah,
but
that's okay.
I mean, we talked about the flashbacks, and but after the meal, and Beggar's walking out, he gets asked if he wants to do some Klingon martial arts with the ambassador.
Yeah, and I believe this was similar to like what Worf practiced, if I'm not mistaken. Like there was like a Klingon form of martial arts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It totally could be. They don't call it a special name in this, but I mean, you put on a robe, you do full contact martial arts. One of the people is a Klingon. The audience isn't going to know the difference between one art style and the next.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we don't need to know, but like, I want to say Worf sparred with Dax, right?
Did spar with Dax. Yes. He also had some scenes doing it on TNG.
With Ezra?
No. On the Enterprise D. On TNG, there was...
No, not Ezra. The other, the Bajoran.
Yeah.
That comes on the Enterprise. I can't remember her name. The one that...
And Rao, right? Ensign Rao?
Yeah, Rao. Ro. Mm.
Ro. Ro, my bad.
Yeah, no. Ensign Ro.
No. It was the other one. There was this the one that wasn't. Crap. Now I have to look it up.
I mean, we can go watch the porno again. So
do not bring that one up again.
No, hey,
that was a bonus episode. It was.
They had sparring match in that.
Check out our Patreon. No. Yeah, so we get this great scene, I think, that's between M'Banga and Ra, and they're sparring, and it's getting kind of intense, and M'Banga's like calling him out.
Ceto Jaxa.
Oh, okay.
Ceto Jaxa, she was in Lower Decks, the episode, not Lower Decks, the show. Season 7, episode 15.
That's a good one, too, yeah. Right. I don't think we've watched that for this podcast yet. We got to.
She did a Klingon martial arts scene with Worf, and he gave her a test where he like put a blindfold on her, and to pass the test, quote unquote, she just had to say, "Hey, this isn't fair."
Ow! You did not anticipate.
How am I supposed to defend myself when I can't see a thing?
Stop making excuses. Replace the blindfold.
No! It's not a fair test.
Very good, Ensign. You have passed the challenge.
What, by taking off the blindfold?
It takes courage to say the test is unfair.
One thing I don't understand. Doesn't Geek Tal mean to the death?
You speak Klingon.
Sir, is there really such a thing as a Geek Tal challenge?
No, there is not. But perhaps next time you are judged unfairly, it will not take so many bruises for you to protest.
Like, just recognize that sometimes tests aren't fair, I guess.
Also that life is never fair, and, you know, when you're in battle, you're never going to have an opponent who's going to fight fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the lesson was supposed to be more like advocate for yourself, like speak up when it's unfair, if it's possible to do so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So Ra basically is trying to get M'Banga to join him, you know, because he figures if these as two former enemies. Exactly. But you know, he figures like look at the PR, you know, like if two former enemies can get over their differences, look, you know.
Yeah, he's essentially what'll that mean like for... hey, come join me on these peace talks, mm-hmm. and we can be a great team. And
bury the hatchet.
They have a flashback where the soldier dies and M'Banga mm-hmm. gets ready to go off and do a mission, and then it cuts back to the medical suite, and Ra and him get into it, and he's like, because I'm the butcher of Jigal.
So when they're doing martial arts, Mabenga's reply is, which of your captains fought you the hardest when you had to kill them?
Oh yeah.
And you know, Ra picks a guy. It doesn't matter, because as we learned, please continue, MC.
Yeah.
It's quite a reveal.
Yeah. Manga's like that. The guy you said didn't fight the hardest. It was this other captain, because I'm the true butcher of Jigal. And we get to see the scene of him like fighting some Klingons while Rara escapes, essentially.
Yeah. It's brutal. It's like he's pulling some like Mortal Kombat moves, like, you know, a dagger to the head. Slits one guy's throat. It's
I wouldn't have expected, if you asked me 10 years ago, is Star Trek going to have a scene where a Klingon gets stabbed with a knife in the head in the center of the frame? I would say, of course not. That's not what Star Trek does. But here we are.
Yeah, you would expect this in like Tarantino's Trek, you know.
But
it was with the context, it made sense. They handled it really well.
It feels appropriate to the episode.
Yeah, it wasn't just gratuitous. Like, there was a purpose behind it.
Yeah, and the reveal of him like just standing there, and he's just like blank faced and covered in blood, and it's like that was emotional and terrifying, and just like. No wonder why this guy has PTSD, like, and why he's reacting like that.
Oh yeah, this is horrible stuff. But you know, it's what I guess he had to do to survive, you know. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? Like, did he go too far?
It's not what he had to do to survive. Yeah, like, he would have survived if he hadn't done that. It's what he thought he had to do to protect others, because when he spoke earlier to the person that they patched up, that Chapel had to like manually pump his heart. His specific speech was that,
"Miss Starfleet, you learn how the rest of the universe treats its maladies. In this war, it's a disease eaten at the heart of the Federation. If we let the Klingons conquer every colony in the sector, they won't stop. They won't go back to Kronos. All of us have to remember what we love most about back home. We fight for them. We fight hoping it doesn't change us. Hoping we'll come home different. But if we don't fight, we don't win. The disease takes over. And none of us have a home to go back to.
I just wish we could stop this without all this dying.
We have to fight so the people we love can have a chance to live in peace. That's Starfleet.
They're there fighting not just to fight. Like, the Klingons just want to fight. Or, you know, that's his claim. But their purpose there is that if they don't fight now, they'll have to fight later anyway, and it will be worse later. So you have to cut it off at the source, so to speak. You have to solve the disease immediately. Don't let it infest the entire patient.
Yeah, end it as soon as we can.
And of course, the revelation that Umbega is the actual butcher of Jigal, and him confronting him, and then he goes and gets the knife out.
Mbenga opens a box, and there's a knife in the box, and it's still covered in blood.
Was not expecting that.
I kind of expected that maybe he would be the real butcher of Jigal, based on like kind of the way that they had shot the flashbacks, but that he would still have the exact knife was like taking it one extra notch, and I didn't expect the actual knife.
Yeah, I guess he kept the evidence because, you know, I don't know. He had his reasons.
One of the best lines in that whole confrontation is when he gets asked why he let the charade go on for so long. And he's like, because I'm ashamed of that moment, unlike you. And he's like, I'm ashamed of my cowardice. And he's like, that's not a real thing.
Yeah, so Mbenga asks Ra, and so Ra says he's ashamed, right?
Yeah.
Is that Okay. Of his cowardice. Just want to make sure who he was referring to.
Oh, yeah. No, Umbega is like, yeah, I killed those people, and I'm ashamed of what I had to do in that situation. And then when Ra's like, I'm also ashamed of that moment because of my cowardice, he's like, you ran away. Like, that's not a real thing that you should be ashamed of. It's like, you escaped justice, essentially. That's how Umbega sees it. And he's like, and that's the moment where you realize when he's like pulling out the knife, like, oh, Ra's not going to escape justice twice.
Yeah. But the way they did this was kind of, it really caught me off guard. It was kind of shocking. I didn't expect him to just straight up stab him, you know?
Murka, dude.
But the way they show it, oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. Mbenga is the one who's ashamed.
Oh, they're both ashamed, but for two completely different reasons.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to be clear. Because Mbenga says that he's ashamed of that night. And I just want, because Mbenga is going to keep being on the show. I just wanted to make sure we're clear on his motivations. Yeah. Even though, as we'll say in a moment, Raj won't keep being on the show.
Yeah, this is the first and last appearance of Ra. Mbenga stabs a dude. Another dude. And
he stabs yet another dude.
I was not expecting them to take his character this direction this season.
So the camera cuts away.
It does.
From showing Mbenga and Ra directly to the main area of sick bay, pointing back at Mbenga's office. And Mbenga's office has these frosted windows. So you can see vaguely, because the room is lit, and then you can see these sort of shadowy outlines of where people are, but you can't see precise movements. All you know is that the knife is in a box on the desk. Cut away, you see them struggling. Yep. And Chapel walks in. She sees clearly what happens. And by the time the camera shows us clearly again, Ra is dead on the ground.
Yeah, we mostly get it through silhouette, which I thought was interesting. It felt very noir. And I was wondering if maybe there was something more to the scene that we didn't see.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, was there more context here? Was Ra reaching for a phaser maybe? And like, Mbenga didn't have a choice? Even though things or was it just like, no, like, I'm not letting you get away this time, you know?
Oh, I definitely think it was, you're not getting away this time. Like, you're not running into the safety of the Federation.
Right.
For a moment, before we see Mbenga again, I thought that the explanation was going to be that, like, Ra had grabbed the knife and killed himself as creating this mythology around the situation plan that he had or something. But that's not how it went.
But that would have made sense too. I was kind of wondering if that was the angle they were going with when this happened. Like, was he trying to be a martyr?
It would have been a way to,
like, I don't know.
There's, well, and also to, like, to excuse Mbenga, to keep him. Like, we don't have to specifically say, oh, he just killed this dude in a non-war context. That's kind of murder. We don't really want our Federation officers to kind of exactly be murderers. So, you know, that's part of why you don't just let the camera have him pick up the knife. You cut away, you do that shooting technique to distance him just for a moment so that he can actually do the kill.
Right. And then what's interesting is we find out, I want to say towards the end, like maybe the last scene, I want to say it's a conversation with Pike, correctly? I mean, correct? Sorry.
Well, yeah. So after Ja is dead, then Chapel speaks to La'an and Pike. Yes. She explains, I saw the whole thing. I saw that Ra picked up the knife and tried to kill Mbenga, and only the butcher of Jigal could have had that knife, so it must have been Ra's knife because he's the butcher of Jigal, even though we know that's a lie. And then, like, the computer does this little scans and dramatically reads off the blood of everyone that's been killed by this knife or whatever.
Yeah.
And Pike's like, yeah, I don't like the situation, but I guess that's good enough for now.
Yeah, kind of cut and dry.
And then he goes to Mavenga after we get Chapel sort of trying to corroborate a fake story.
Right. Yeah, that was interesting. But so during this scene, and I'm sorry I didn't watch it right beforehand, so I don't remember the specifics, but basically Mabanga reveals that there's a little bit more to Ra's character. Like, he did some horrible stuff. Like, basically he murdered children. He, like, you know, I don't know, like, there's a lot implied. I don't know if they really get into details, but it's pretty awful sounding.
Do you war crimes, essentially.
Yeah, like.
Well, and so Mavenga says, what if I told you he murdered children, not his men, he did it. Like Ra
personally
was pulling the trigger or swinging the knife or whatever happened. He wasn't just giving some order.
Yeah.
Would that change your opinion then, Pike? And Pike's sort of like, I don't know, but probably you shouldn't be doing that. Yeah. And Mavenga says, well, you can say that because you've never been where I've been. Right. And that's why you can only look at the brighter side of things.
That's right.
And that's why he's the captain and Mavenga is not.
Right. But that's, you know, he didn't have to go through the war because the Enterprise was off on a wacky mission, which you can read about in that completely bonkers book I mentioned last time, where Spock has a mech suit. But yeah, like, yeah, the Enterprise, Pike and his crew were not a part of the war.
The book, the Admiral, whatever her name was, from Discovery.
Yes.
In Discovery season 2, when she's talking to Pike, she's like, the Federation deliberately put you and a few other ships way outside the war because you could have helped us, but by, like, putting you in a time capsule, so to speak, where we were attempting to preserve the spirit of the Federation so that you'd bring it back to us after we were all war traumatized.
Definitely. So, you know. That's what's, you know, I feel like Strange New Worlds is kind of that metaphorically in a way. Like,
I'm just
it
glad.
Feels like they're bringing the spirit of Trek back, right? Like, after the Abrams movies and Discovery and, you know, all these side tangents where things got dark and weird. It's like, no, Star Trek is back.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we're still getting, like, really, like, subtle and kind of like badass Andorian still.
Like, yeah.
But that I really think that idea of, like, Andorians were fighting the Vulcans and everyone else for so long, and they're just like
scrappy.
We're going to fight someone. Yeah, let's go. Let's do this. And then they get their antennas touched in. They're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. they do have that one very and obvious weakness.
Yeah.
I think we get to see more Andorians because the budgets are a little bit better. And it's a lot of money to make up an Andorian.
With, like, Tellarites,
too. A lot of blue paint, a lot of work. Yeah, Tellarites are even more energy to get stuff. So that's why, you know, that's why we mostly limit it to, like, you stick a prosthetic on their forehead and then you kind of paint around the edge. And even then, like Worf and Quark, it's like 4 hours in makeup to put on that costume.
Right. It's a full day job. Almost.
Which is why in Deep Space Nine, the main aliens are bloody Bajorans, because they just have to do nose prosthetics, which take about an hour still, but pump out, like, a bunch of them.
Right.
Yeah, Cardassians seem like they would be probably the most complicated because of ridges go down the neck.
Yeah.
The outfit. Yeah, it just seems like a lot. I don't know. Seems very uncomfortable.
Yep.
But speaking of prosthetics, what did you guys think of Ra's design? Like, how do you feel about the Strange New World? How do you feel about this show's approach to Klingon so far as opposed to, like, Discovery?
Oh, I mean, it's great. I don't know that Discovery had a bad version of Klingons. I didn't object to the Discovery version of Klingons. I would have liked to have seen more of them. Not just, like, they show up in one episode and then we're told that this war is happening far off. And then we do get to see him a little bit at the end. I like those bits at the end in the last two or three episodes of the season or however much it was.
Yeah.
I think it's a good mix, like how they came up with the Strange New World ones. Like they've still got a little bit of the aspect from the Discovery ones, but they definitely seem more like the Next Generation ones and after sort of thing. Like
it feels like they found
it's getting better. Like the prosthetics are getting better, and I'm guessing they're easier, like, set up that makeup now.
Yeah, I feel like they found a really good compromise, and I think it works. You know, I'm willing to roll with it. The weird thing about Discovery, and I didn't hate the Klingon design. I actually thought it was really bold and interesting, but I feel like they made sort of a mistake early on in that show, because there's a scene where they show all the different Klingon houses, right? You got all these different Klingons coming together, and it would have been really clever if they just showed us different types of Klingons in that scene. Like, you got your TNG Klingons, a couple motion picture Klingons, maybe like a sort of nuanced version of the TOS Klingon, you know what I mean? But like different versions all in one room, because that would have just solved all of the canon problems that people have, to show that there's different races of Klingons. You know, we've always kind of assumed that, but you know,
I'm not sure. Like,
maybe not the TOS ones, I don't know.
Sort of. So in the way that Lower Decks is an animated show instead of a live action, and we're just sort of like, oh, it's all just part of Star Trek, I think presenting Klingons as looking slightly different is fine. I don't really care if, like, Andorians are a little bit different, or Klingons or Tellarites or whoever. That's... like, we know what group we're talking
Romulans
about.
Sometimes they have the weird
or Romulans. I think TNG. Like the original Klingons were definitely not good. The original Klingons were supposed to be like, they're like a bad Hollywood version of Mongols, and it wasn't
great.
Good.
No,
don't
not great at all.
Repeat that. Other
no,
than
no,
that, basically it's fine. That. Everything since then, it's kind of whatever.
It doesn't really bother me. I just felt like they could have silenced a lot of angry fans by that one scene.
I guess my headcanon for that would be, and, you know, maybe it's me bringing something and sort of excusing something, whatever. But, like, this is supposed to be the leader guy, Volk, is, like, this super fanatic. Yeah. So he only invites people that are also super fanatic people.
That makes sense.
And, like, they don't have hair because they're all, like, some sort of Klingon shaving their head or whatever it is that they're doing that's making them, like, they've got a look in the same way that, like, some other fanatical guy invites a bunch of other fanatical guys and they all have the same look, because that's part of their fanaticism.
That's a good point.
Also,
the tracks.
There's some episodes that imply that the Klingons don't have a ban against genetic alterations. So that's also another avenue that they can probably explore.
Oh, yeah.
There's that whole storyline in Enterprise about it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I was referencing.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
No, it's fine, because we didn't say what the episode name was. As long as we don't say what episode name has what episode story, it's fine. Episode.
But yeah, we'll get there. It's on the list for sure. That's an important one. Let's see. I'm trying to think if we missed anything else on this one. There was a lot. I don't know.
Speaking of,
any final thoughts on it?
I believe, MC, you said something about the word metaphorical. The bookend of this show, this episode, is at the start of the episode, BioBed 2 is breaking down. It had some sort of damage at some point that was never fully repaired, just patched over. And then at the end of the episode, Mbenga's medical officer's log is that, once again, he's managed to fix BioBed 2, but some things can't ever be fixed fully, and it's kind of only a matter of time until it breaks down again. And he's obviously not talking about BioBed 2 when he gives these medical logs.
Yeah, he's talking about his mental state and, you know, having to kill Klingons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally on screen, we see him interacting with Biobed 2, but he's not talking about Biobed 2. We know that. We've read a story once before ever.
Yeah. This is.
We can tell when someone's foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah.
So, but actually, so we talked about watching Star Trek when you're young. When you're a kid, maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you'd hear that and you'd be like, oh, yeah, he fixed the biobed. He's literally talking about an actual biobed because we saw it on screen. But, you know, as an adult, you're like, no, that's not what he's talking about. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that hit really good. I mean, this is an emotional one. It really sticks with you.
Yeah. All about confronting your trauma and how different people deal with it. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes you don't.
It's not something you can fix overnight.
No, it's not something you fix overnight. But we spent most of our time talking about how Mbengo is doing because he gets the most screen time. But I do want to point out that Chapel and Ortegas each have portions of time that they're trying to recover from this, and they're still not over the Klingon War. And, you know, they didn't get as much screen time, but their stories are no less important.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, no, I thought that was great. I love both of those characters. They've done a really good job with them. And I think this was a side of them we hadn't really seen much prior to this. Ortegas is so positive, you know. Nurse Chapel, too.
Ortegas is normally very positive. Yeah. I think it's interesting that when they picked a third character to have been strongly affected by the war, they picked Ortegas. Because at the end of season one, when they did the Balance of Terror type episode, Ortegas is the racist officer who doesn't trust the Romulans. And then if we sort of connect this around, it's because she has this history of being in heavy wars against alien empires. And it sort of
makes sense,
reinforces across the seasons in a nice way. I don't even know that the writers were thinking about that, but
no, I think that's great. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
What they're doing with this show. For sure. For sure. But yeah, they're doing some really interesting
show.
Yeah. They're, I mean,
hey,
it works on so many levels. Like as an episode, it's good. Within the context of Trek, it's good. But also there's just all these other layers going on. I'm just impressed. This is such good writing. This whole season's great.
Right.
What were you saying?
Right. I was just going to point out that I've on several occasions mentioned that I've got some other friends who are sometimes more cynical about Strange New Worlds than we are. But this episode, they gave very high marks.
Oh.
High marks even among people that don't appreciate Strange New Worlds. Because
that's awesome.
It did very well.
That's good to hear. I wonder what they'll think of the next one.
You know, what will anyone think of the next one?
Right. I don't know. This whole season's been interesting. It's been a bit of a roller coaster because just last episode, we were talking about the Lower Decks crossover, which was very funny, very over the top. And then this one was one of the most serious episodes we've had yet, all about the traumas of war and PTSD. Next episode, we have a musical.
I think they need to do that because, that
with the heavy subject matter.
Not just this episode, but two episodes ago as well.
Well, and my guess is because they keep doing this back and forth, darker episode, lighter episode, darker episode. I feel like after the music episode, the last one, it's called
Hegemony.
Hegemony. That's it. Which I think refers to the Gorn. Sounds like it's going to be a Gorn episode because we haven't seen them this season.
It's got to be a Gorn episode.
I mean, they brought up this episode with the biobed.
I mean, the Gorn episode last season was very dark. We had a couple last season. Yeah, I'm expecting the worst. I hope we don't lose anyone. Let me just put it that way. Okay, here's a question. If we do, who's the red shirt this time around? If we do lose a
character.
Who's
the red shirt this time?
Yeah, okay. Because I mean, season one basically ended with us losing Hemmer, right? Do you think we're going to lose someone every season?
No.
Well, we know who it can't be.
It can't be Uhura or Spock or Chapel or Mabenga or Pike, which leaves we have to kill
not a lot of characters left, right? Narrows
we
down,
have
at
to
least.
Kill Ortegas. Unacceptable.
Oh, do not.
Completely unacceptable.
I'd be so upset.
The engineer, whatever her name, unacceptable.
Oh, yeah, the new engineer.
I hope not. She's good.
I guess they could theoretically kill Una. Unacceptable.
I would be upset about that.
There's no one that they can kill without just riots and pitchforks.
Do we know if, what's her name? The engineer? Do we know if she's contracted for season 3?
Helia?
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, she's a guest star.
Yeah. I have a weird feeling that every season we're going to get a different engineer.
You know.
That's just my theory. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, kind of.
Until Scotty turns up.
Until Scotty. Yeah, because it's a cursed position until he takes over, right? Could be an interesting thing.
So they're going to kill the thousands of years old lady. They're just going to end her story. A Gorn eats her is how she dies after living for 3,000 years.
You know, I hope I'm wrong. I'm just saying, if I had to bet money and someone had to die, I'd rather her. That's terrible to say. I just don't want it to
what
be
if
Ortegas.
It's maybe La'an?
What if it's La'an?
No,
La'an,
do
yeah,
not.
Charges into the Gorn. And dies at the hands of the Gorn.
Oh, that would be upsetting.
Listeners, I can see the look on Eric's face. He's covering his mouth in horror.
I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with that.
No one would be, but it would make sense.
Because her, it would make sense, unfortunately. But her and Kirk have to end up together because I shipped them already, okay?
Oh,
like, I need that to happen at some point. I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Yeah, it's probably her. Anyways, we're going to talk about a musical episode next.
What if she uses a time bomb to blow them up and also transport into a parallel reality at the same time? And she dates Kirk from a parallel reality and just lives there forever.
I think I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay with if they write her off that way. That could be clever.
Okay.
All right. So I thought this was a great episode. Might be the best. One of the best. Top three Strange New Worlds for me. What about you guys?
Yeah. I'm predisposed to this kind of story. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. And this is what Trek does good.
I really liked it. I thought showing like how different people cope with and deal with trauma and just like try and settle back in normal life is very poignant after you know the decades-long wars that we've had across the planet and the ones that are continuing on today, and how we have to be accepting and like cautious around these people and try and help them through it.
Yeah, if you know any veterans in your life, some of this might speak to you. I mean, if you haven't experienced it, you know, it's kind of hard to relate, but you got to have compassion for people who've been through that. War is always horrible, but any other final thoughts? Did we get
Loke of the? I'd like to point out that there is a particular set of Deep Space Nine episodes that I won't say the names of, but in one episode, Sisko has a vision, like an alternate world vision of like how he is a writer trying to have a better future in racist 1950s.
Oh, no. We actually covered that.
Hold on. Followed by the next episode is an incredibly silly, we're going to shrink a Defiant down to Olimar size, or we're going to shrink a Runabout down to Olimar size, and it's going to fly in the circuit panels of the ship and get up to hijinks. Followed by the next episode, O'Brien has to be an undercover agent for a mafia guy who he's going to get killed by the end of the episode. So Strange New Worlds is just following in the grand tradition of just alternating dark and silly and dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, DS9 did that well, too. That's a good point. You got the Tribble episode in the middle of, like, this, you know, horrible war. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess we're going to beam over to Sunnydale? from Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Sunnydale is... Oh! Yeah,
I get the reference now.
Sorry.
Okay. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Well, for a moment, I didn't know if you meant to say Riverdale, but like forgot the name of the show.
I mean, yeah. That
because Riverdale's also done like a musical episode per season, several seasons or something like that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't think they had an explanation for why they were doing... like. They just had a musical going on. They were just doing music because who cares why? We're just going to do it.
Because
so
reasons.
We're going to the Alps?
Sure. If that
I
okay,
think Sunnydale's in California.
MC's going to the Alps because he wants to sing about how the something about the Sound of Music or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, Sound of Music.
Lokothor is beaming down to Riverdale and I'm going to be over
in Massachusetts, maybe.
3 to beam out.
Incoming transport.